You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast out of Wesley Seminary at Iwu. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Care.
Sometimes it's very difficult to see the balance between family, work, other relationships, church. Maybe church is work. Maybe church involves family. All those things wrapped together. And yet the common denominator among all of those things for all of us is ourselves. We're the one who's in our family, in our work, in our relationships, in our church. We are the ones who are present. Today's guest, Dr. Robert Creech, is going to help us analyze some of these different contexts through Bowen Family Systems Theory. Dr. Creech is the author of Family Systems and Congregational Life, A Map for Ministry, published by Baker Academic. He's going to affirm something that is so important for leaders to understand, which is we cannot control what another person does, says, or thinks. We can only work on ourselves. When we change ourselves, we are changing the systems that we find ourselves in. When we are changing ourselves and working on ourselves, then we are changing the system that is our family, that is our church, that is our relationships. In this episode, you're going to hear about Bowen Family Systems Theory. You're going to hear about different techniques for leadership. You're going to hear about how Bowen Family Systems is a map for ministry and understanding the different relational contexts we find ourselves in. On the one hand, it is theoretical, and Dr. Creech is even going to tell us what theory means. But on the other hand, it is so practical if we're able to internalize and simply practice some of the things that are involved in Bowen Family Systems. I encourage you to take a look at what is involved in the 8 components of Bowen Family Systems. Maybe even have them before you, print them out and have them with you whenever you're listening to this podcast or refresh your mind on them. It'll be really helpful as you go through it. Thanks so much to Cam for producing these podcasts. Thanks to Dr. Creech for joining us in this episode. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. I think you're going to enjoy this podcast. Have a good day. So let's start at the very beginning, Dr. Creech. You note that we sometimes think of theory as a guess, but that's not the case whenever we use theory in a scientific context. So before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of the work that you've given to us on family systems theory, tell us, what does theory mean?
Okay, that's a good question, because we do use it as a common term at times, meaning I've got a hunch about something, I have a theory about that. But as a scientific term, a theory describes a body of knowledge that's based on a large set of observations or findings or experiments that have been gathered over time. They've been verified, and a theory is made up of statements that are as close to fact as a scientist is willing to use that term. They are things that can be disproved. They're open to being checked and disproved, and they are usually grounded in a discipline. In this case, Bowen Family Systems Theory is heavily grounded in both biology and clinical psychology. So it's more than just a guess at how things work. It's the observations and conclusions have been reached over a long period of time.
I know in my own studies, often using theories, I try to describe to students that theories are lenses that help us look at what is otherwise maybe complex or fuzzy, and hopefully help us to simplify or to clarify what's going on. If I can kind of see the pieces coming into fit, right, or the picture coming into focus. And Bowen Family Systems Theory, I think, is a very helpful one. Talk to us a little bit about it. What is Bowen Family Systems Theory, and what does it seek to explain or predict or describe?
Okay, and kind of in line with what you're just saying, Aaron, I've used the metaphor of a map for what a theory functions as. It helps us to negotiate our way through the territory. And the territory that Bowen Family Systems Theory addresses is the territory of human relationships. Bowen set out to devise what he called a scientific theory of human behavior. He was interested not in a Freudian and Jungian and some of these other perspectives on human psychology and human behavior that were grounded less in science and more in story, mythology, some other kinds of backgrounds. And Bowen grounded his in biology. He believed that human beings are be best understood if we're understood as with what we have in common with the rest of the created order, rather than what is distinctive about us, and that our behavior could be understood that way. And so it is a scientific theory of human behavior is what Bowen family systems theory is. Murray Bowen came to that by observing families, usually in extreme crisis, families of schizophrenic patients in a clinical setting, for example, where these things were blown up large and easier to see. But then he noticed that he saw the same kinds of things happening in the families that he was seeing in his clinical practice, that just in much milder form than you'd see in those extreme cases. And so he began to understand that human beings' behavior is best seen as part of what he called an emotional system, that the family is an emotional unit, and that we don't just pull out one person and explain their behavior apart from their relationship and interaction with the others who are part of that emotional system. So it is a series. He devised 8 concepts over time that describe his theory and explain what he believed to be human behavior, not just North American 20th century behavior, but stuff that is accurate in reading biblical stories, such as that of the patriarchs or the life of Jesus, as well as our own lives and our own congregations.
So it gives us a way to analyze a person's behavior and see them kind of as parts of systems or as parts of context. And it's probably easier for us to see how this does map into families, right? I mean, that's right. Part of where it emerges from. But you're saying that it also gives us helpful lenses or helpful maps into congregational lives. How do you see it branching out into churches?
Well, in family systems theory, you'd sort of assume that we've learned how to deal with life and the anxieties of life in relationships. We learn that in our families, and everybody takes what they've learned to church with them. So congregations tend to operate on the same set of principles or concepts that nuclear families would operate in. For example, Bowen theory assumes that the primary thing we're up against in our life as human beings is the way that we are wired in our brains to manage anxiety or threat, and that we only have a handful of things in our repertoire that we do that with. People are familiar with fight and flight, such as that. Well, that we enter conflict when we become more anxious, or we grow distant from others when we become anxious, or we overfunction or underfunction is his terms. We start telling people what to believe, telling people what to think, telling people how to do everything they need to do. That's overfunctioning. Or we become passive and neglect our responsibilities to think for ourselves or to act for ourselves. That's underfunctioning. Or we choose someone to blame or pass gossip on about or worry about. That's called projection in his theory. Those 4 things that human beings know how to do when anxiety rises. And we do those with families, and that happens in congregations as well. So being able to notice, I compare it to being like instruments on the dashboard of your car, when at any given time there is some ambient level of anxiety, and so there's some moderate level of the needle on your anxiety meters showing a little bit of conflict, and some people are distant and some people are under functioning. But if those needles, one or more of those, start moving significantly, then that's an indicator that anxiety is rising. And it's a good thing for a leader to be able to ask what's changed, and where's the anxiety coming from, and what's my part in it, and how do I adjust my behavior to maybe help those needles go back down. It doesn't do any good to grab the needle and pull it over to the left anymore than your oil pressure. So just trying to manage conflict doesn't necessarily solve the problem. If the conflict is a symptom, then you need to get back to where's the anxiety coming from.
I've just finished working on some papers that have to do with budgeting and encouraging students that people who are able to handle both details and a certain amount of chronic anxiety are the people you want
on your finance teams, precisely because they need to be ones who are not reacting to maybe drops in giving or unexpected budgets, not reacting to those things and increasing the anxiety of the whole organization. You want people who are able to handle some of these things that just are part of the warp and woof of congregational living. And that, yeah. that illustration of who's not going to react as a dial, right, so to speak, really quickly, that's a great illustration of the kind of person you want, right? Who's going to be able to maintain that steady speed, even if they hit a speed bump, or even if there's a distraction up ahead, they're able just to signal, shift lanes, maintain speed, instead of slamming on the brakes and coming to a stop, and they're in danger, thereby actually endangering other people around them. I think it's a helpful illustration. One of the things you mentioned is not just managing conflict. And yet in families, I speak for myself, in churches, when I've been a part of it, so often the conflict is what gets our attention. And mm-hmm. and often the people who are the most alarming in conflict can get our attention. But one of the things that Family Systems affirms is to focus on those who are healthy, right? To focus on those who are strong and are maybe able to maintain a healthy role or to shift their role so that the whole system can kind of follow suit. How does that idea of focusing on those people who are stronger or healthier, how does that play into some of the leadership that pastors might give to churches?
Yeah, it's a couple of things. One is, I think the primary focus for somebody working from a perspective family systems is focusing on oneself. To learn how to recognize anxiety rising in ourselves, to know how to calm that, to do the kinds of things that practices that would help us be less reactive, and that the person who is working on themselves in that way is in a position to be better, more help for the organization when anxiety hits. But also knowing who in the system are less reactive, more mature, emotionally mature, and can be depended on, rather than organizing around the least mature. And families that aren't functioning well, and I think congregations that aren't functioning well, often get organized around the least mature person in the system. And that's a danger. But it's better if we can, as you said, pay attention to our strengths and lean into that, but particularly working on oneself is, I think, where the power of the theory lies, because I can't control anybody else in the whole system. So I can work on myself, and then they have to deal with a person who is learning to be more principled and more thoughtful and less reactive, and the whole system adjusts to that.
So the book you've written, Family Systems and Congregational Life, A Map for Ministry, one of the things that you've done is just take some data that projects where Western society is headed, and really global society, in terms of being far more urbanized, being living in closer quarters, living further away from nature, and saying, boy, some of the anxiety that's going to increase as a result of these changing environmental factors, some of the anxiety is just going to keep going up and up. And so one of the important things for pastors and spiritual leaders to be able to do, you know, right, starting in the present, but especially as the future unfolds, is to be able to be differentiated, right? To have a sense that's able to handle some of this chronic anxiety. You predict the increased chronic anxiety in the present world will just give an opportunity for pastors to lead by offering calming, differentiated presence. Now, there's a whole lot put into that observation I've just made. Let me kind of back it up a little bit and just ask, what does it mean, or what do you mean by differentiated?
Okay. Bowen chose that term because it has biological reference, even as an embryo is developing. The cells initially are stem cells, but they begin to differentiate into different functions that they will play in the body or in the biological system. And in the same way, he said that we human beings are emotionally fused first to our parents and our family of origin, and we carry that fusion and relationship into other relationships, particularly our marriage and then with our own children. To be differentiated is to work on that fusion so that I am becoming more conscious of what I believe, not what others have told me to believe. I'm more clear on my own principles. I'm able, in the midst of other people's anxiety, to remain connected to them without taking on their anxiety. I can remain a calmer presence in the system. He uses the term emotional maturity as a synonym for differentiation. And I kind of prefer that because it doesn't sound quite as cold. But to be an emotionally mature person is a person who is able to know both what you think and what you feel, and to keep those things separate, and to manage rising anxiety in oneself with a calmer presence, not to just calm yourself down, but actually become a calmer presence over time. Jesus is a great example of this. I think he represents the most well-differentiated person we can imagine. So you see him frequently in the midst of conflict with his disciples or his opponents, and he is just the calmest person in the room. He knows how to ask questions. He knows how to think. He doesn't get done in by others' anxiety, and he becomes sort of a model for that. Or I can think of, in the book I mentioned, I think 1 Corinthians 13's description of Christ-like love is a description of a well-differentiated life. So it means to be less dependent on your own emotions, for your own emotions, upon the emotions of others, and being able to think when you need to think, and being able to be present with people who are themselves anxious without taking on their anxiety. That's one of the 1,000 definitions, I think, that you could gather in the writings about this subject, but that's kind of how I think about that.
One of the illustrations that I found really helpful when thinking about differentiation is the difference between a thermometer and a thermostat. So a thermometer is going to reveal the temperature of what's happening. A thermostat is able to adjust it. And differentiated people think of themselves as thermostats, that their ability to stay cool and self-regulated, that's going to impact the rest of the room in as much as they're influential, right? In as much as they are either perceived or an actual leader in the room. Whereas when we're just reactionary, it's more like being a thermometer that will reveal what the temperature of the room is, but we have nothing to do to change it.
Well, actually, if you're the leader, you may actually increase the temperature of the room. You may. Because leaders have an unusual amount of influence on things. So when the system is anxious and it's fed into an anxious leader, it may have cut. We become like a transformer, I guess. It may come into us at, you know, some amount of wattage, but it leaves at a higher one then. And so it becomes a vicious cycle that the more anxious the system, the more anxious the leader, the more anxious the leader, the more anxious the system. And that's why being able to be a kind of what Ed Friedman called a step down transformer, so that the anxiety that comes in that we receive actually goes out at a lower power than we received it. That's one way of thinking about that. Friedman used the expression being a non-anxious presence, and I'm not really fond of that expression because I don't think there's anyone that's non-anxious except in cemeteries, but they are. To be non-anxious is not to be reactive at all to the environment around us. But I'm okay with a less anxious presence. To try to be the calmest person in the room is a worthy goal.
I'm thinking about even the metaphor that influence comes from is influenza, right? We don't think of it in that way anymore, but clear that influence can have good effects, right? If they're in a good direction or toward a healthy state of being, or they can have bad effects, right? It can raise the anxiety unnecessarily, or it can raise the anxiety maybe necessarily, right? So the difference between acute anxiety and chronic anxiety, maybe some people need to have their anxiety raised to a point where they do act, and it's the leader that's able to get them on the same border to reveal what needs to be the case. And other times we're trying to act acutely or act responsively in the moment. And really we just need to take a breath. And so it's kind of which flu are you catching? Are you catching one that's healthy, or are you catching one that's unhealthy?
Yeah. Everything a leader does is contagious, good or ill. And so it's important that we're working on becoming the best version of ourselves, the one God hopes us to be, so that what influence goes out from us tends to help rather than hurt.
One of the things that I've found just in self-awareness is a distinction between red and blue states. I don't mean states as in the United States. I mean, you know, personal states of being, that there are some things that make me feel red, that make that threaten to raise my internal temperature. And those might be good things that raise my internal temperature, my sense of acting, or there might be bad things that raise it. And then there's also blue states, things that I'm able to stay calm and cool under pressure, and even asking, you know, maybe I should get a little bit more heated whenever this comes about, but just being self-aware of what makes me heat up and being self-aware about what I can stay cool under is a really helpful set of knowledge whenever I'm thinking about how I can act appropriately and proactively and not simply reactively as a leader in the midst of anxiety and different complex scenarios.
Yeah, I think one of the marks of differentiation is the capacity to choose one's reactions or responses rather than to automatically do them and then come up with a reason for why we did what we did. Mm-hmm. That requires a degree of self-awareness about what it is that is, what's going on inside me. And mostly things happen automatically without our awareness. And part of differentiation is becoming more aware of what we are responding to, more attuned to those needles on the dashboard and paying attention to some of those things going on in us.
So I started this out by you making the observation that anxiety is likely going to increase as people are living in smaller spaces, as cities are becoming more densely populated, as people's connection with nature is increasingly alienated, right? They're going to be around less green and around more chrome, so to speak. More cement, more chrome is not usually a recipe for less anxiety. And so you talk about the opportunities for pastors to be leaders in the midst of this, context, by being differentiated. Let me kind of follow up on that then. Now that we have a sense of what differentiation is, why do you think that will become a key act of leadership in the future?
Well, I think it will become a key act because human beings don't change. That the more the anxiety increases in society, we will be bringing that anxiety with us to church, to our committee meetings, to our worship services, and we will leave those places either having that fan to flame more, say if pastors are decide to, you know, spend their time preaching around hot button issues and people leave more fired up than they came in about something. So we're going to have that influence one way or the other. And to be a calmer leader, who, when people come into the presence of God in worship, are able to be led to connect with God and not have their fear and anxiety just fanned into flame by what goes on at church, the calmer leader is going to make a difference. And then that leaves people who are calmer people to a degree, who are able to think and make better decisions. And I think that kind of ripple effect goes out. But it does take someone working hard to be a better differentiated person and being present in the relationships in a way that is helpful rather than contributing to the increased amount of anxiety in the world that is comes to us in so many directions right now.
It might be a sign of kind of the increased anxiety, but sometimes when we think leadership or we thinking about what leaders do, we might think about people who are able to take quick action and give immediate solution or to make an immediate kind of difference. And I'm thinking about, you know, somebody who's listening in. Maybe it's a parent and they see their child is needing some kind of difference maker in their life, or maybe their leadership of an organization, a church, maybe they're a coach. Variety of people who have a sense of responsibility and want to take action, and they're feeling the pressure to take quick action, have immediate solution. What might you say to this person who's kind of right in the midst of the fire right now?
Yeah. Well, one thing I would say is I do not believe there are any quick fixes, that this is intentional work that one does on oneself, and that it takes time. I do think a little bit of effort goes a long way in working on yourself. It's as long as I'm trying to fix the system, whether that system is my family, a kid, a spouse, or if it's in church, if it's a deacon or an elder or someone, as long as I'm trying to use this to manipulate that, I'm not focused on myself and I'm not working from a systems perspective. Family systems theory is not a bag of tricks or techniques or quick fixes. It is a way of learning to think about how human beings relate to each other and being a responsible person in that relationship. So to just be able to work on myself in relationship primarily to my family first, and learn to be a calmer presence there, learning to be better, clearer about what I think and what I believe. There are things one can do. There are practices like spiritual disciplines, I guess you could say, that help toward over time differentiation. But a little bit of effort, I do believe, goes a long way. That systems respond pretty immediately to somebody who's making a personal change. And if there's not some response or reaction sometime to what we're attempting to do, that's probably indicating that we're not really making much of a change in ourselves. But I would urge somebody like that to begin to learn. The systems theory is not difficult to understand or learn. It's 8 basic concepts. It's pretty clear. It's common sense in many ways. Bowen didn't claim to have invented anything. He just described what he saw. And it's a step, when you start reading it, you go, well, that's what I see too. And then figuring out in the midst of what I'm seeing, how do I take what I'm learning and make changes in my own behavior? And there are ways to do that, working with your parents if they're still around, working with your spouse and your child, not for working on them, working on yourself in relationship to them. And it beats the quick fixes and the snake oils of leadership all to pieces, I think. Ed Friedman says that a well-differentiated person, leader, makes any leadership theory look good. And by the same token, a poorly differentiated leader is not going to find a leadership theory that's going to do this magic thing for him. We have to work on becoming the version of ourselves God hopes we'll be. And toward Christ-likeness, and that includes emotional maturity in my book. So literally in my book. So it's like,
The reason I laugh is because it's exactly what was on my mind. One of the reasons you say you write this was to be able to articulate what it was you thought and to give precision to it. Sometimes I'll have friends or colleagues in ministry, and they'll say, boy, I'd love to go to seminary except for all the writing. And I want to say, well, part of the reason that you want to go to seminary is to write, is to learn how to be precise and to get a sense of who you are, to be, you have right at the start of your book, writing clarifies thinking like few other activities. And sometimes it's in writing, whether it's, you know, personal discipline of journaling or making lists or being able to do brain dumps, that there's a certain amount of work on ourselves that it happens just by writing. And we get a sense of, boy, what's in my mind? What am I carrying around? Or to use your metaphor of a map in a way, is writing helps us to draw the immediate map right around us. You know, that we might not be able to see far away from where we are, but we can get a sense of, oh, this is the immediate terrain in which I'm living that I'm carrying around with me. And so I find that writing is a great practice. It's very helpful for leaders to start to do some of this work on themselves.
And often when writing is difficult, it is because we're not clear about what we're thinking. And so it sort of forces us to see our lack of clarity about an idea or something, and then to figure out how to get clear about it. And so it does push us into thinking more than just kind of an emotional feeling response to the world around us.
Joining us today has been Dr. Robert Creech. Dr. Creech is the author of Family Systems and Congregational Life, A Map for Ministry, a book on Bowen Family Systems Theory and applied to a number of different aspects of pastoral leadership, published by Baker Academic. Dr. Creech, thank you for doing the hard work of writing this out so that we've got thoughts that are well articulated that we can reflect upon, and that we can even use as a map for our own selves and potentially for as a map for our own ministry leadership.
Well, thank you, Dr. Perry. I really appreciate the invitation to think with you about this, and maybe we'll get to do that again sometime. There is a book I wrote with two colleagues on leadership called Leader's Journey on Leadership in Family Systems Theory, and it's coming out in a second edition by Baker in January. So maybe we can think together again sometime.
Let's plan it down. I will certainly follow up with you about that. Thank you for mentioning it. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Thanks for using this time, we hope, as a lens or a map to consider some of your own life and ministry and leadership. We hope it's effective in your family, in your own life, as you lead yourself, and then out from there in the different communities in which you have responsibility and possibility to be a change agent, or one who's taking effective and living an effective role in those cultures, contexts, and systems. Check out some of the other podcast episodes that are available from the Wesley Seminary podcast, and thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.